This is Meredith for Real, the Curious Introvert, and I'm Meredith. Here we explore the taboo, less obvious, and paradoxical aspects of society. Questions that you think but don't ask. Questions that need nuanced answers, not just Google results. These are the conversations you thought you'd never get to have. And the goal? To inspire curiosity over judgment. Each episode is different, so bring your ADD and your earbuds and have a look around. This week is a special episode and really different from what I normally do. So if you're new to my show and you have never heard of Scott Johnson and the What Was That Like show, save this one for later. If you're a fan of his show or mine and would love to pull back the curtain on podcasting, this will be a fun one. For years, y'all have been telling me how much you enjoy the true crime genre. So I wanted to give you a little behind the scenes from one of its top creators. And I wanted to introduce you to the host, Scott, because he recently invited me to co-host a weekly segment on What Was That Like? So this is a relaxed hybrid of a conversation and an interview where we share what inspired us to start our respective shows, how Scott vets his guests, podcaster pet peeves, what episodes we've recorded but not aired, topics too taboo for our shows, and how podcasting has changed our minds. If you end up liking this episode, you'll also like the one I did with travel writer and fellow podcaster Joe Sills on episodes that changed our lives. That's episode 119. Lastly, if you like giving your opinion and getting free stuff, you are officially invited to join my private Facebook group. Just click the link in the episode description to request to join. All right, friends, keep it curious. Many of you are fans of the true crime genre, unwinding from a long day at the office with the scoop on the best place to bury the body and theories on where the murder took place. Ohio. It's always Ohio. But behind the scenes of the best true crime shows is a lot of work, vetting, and a delicate balance for sensitivity to the victim and the audience. But have you ever wondered what that's like? My next guest asks that question all the time on his show, where he talks with real people who have been in unreal situations. With over 10 million downloads, the What Was That Like podcast is a fan favorite. And today is an inside look, or listen, of two podcasters, their efforts to humanize the digital experience, and how podcasting has changed their view of the world. Avid bicyclist, purveyor of dad jokes, the Oprah Winfrey of true crime, Scott Johnson. Welcome to the show.
Wow. What an intro. Did ChatGPT write that for you?
Hell no, I wrote that shit myself.
I knew that. Yeah, that's pretty amazing. I want to meet myself now.
Yeah, right. Well, it's good to see you. It's been, you know, so long. I say that jokingly because a lot of my listeners will ask me, do you know that person in real life? Because we'll have like a good chemistry. So I feel like we should say from the beginning that you and I actually know each other in real life.
We do. Yeah. Or we have met in real life. I mean, we're multiple miles away from each other, but yeah, we do. And I agree with whoever said that. We have a chemistry.
Same state, different cities. But yeah, we actually, for those who haven't figured it out yet, Scott and I talk every week. We are co-hosting a special segment on his show. So we literally are regularly touching base and having conversations related to the questions in his private Facebook group.
And it's a blast. I love it. I don't know if the listeners like it or not, but I'm having fun with it.
I'm having fun too. I really like it. And as I was cyber stalking you to prepare for this episode, I learned that you've been podcasting since 2012, which is definitely within the realm of when people were like, how do I listen to a podcast?
It was kind of like that back then. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what was your gateway drug to start listening to podcasts yourself?
I would love to be able to just turn back the time and picture myself the first time I said, what's a podcast? Let's go exploring and find something to listen to, because I really don't remember. I'm thinking it was probably some shows about running, because I was really into long distance running and there were a bunch of shows talking about that. And so I assume that's what it was. I was thinking maybe it was Serial, but no, Serial came out like 3 years after I started listening to podcasts.
Was that your first true crime podcast that you listened to?
It probably was, yeah. And it was just because it, you know, it had so much hype. And I remember listening to it while I was out doing overnight long distance runs.
You listen to true crime podcasts while running in the dark alone?
Well, that's really asking for it, isn't it?
Well, I mean, on the one hand, it's very smart because you're afraid. I used to live in this little town or little neighborhood in my town where I lived alone. And the neighborhood was one of those where it's like kind of okay, but kind of sketchy. And I went through a phase where I would run 1 mile every night. And it was dark by the time I was home and able to run. And I ran by the water. And so there was this walkway right by the water, but there was often like just people kind of hanging out, you know, after dark. There wasn't, but either way, I was always aware that that could be a possibility. And I'll tell you what, I ran a 6 minute mile. I ran real fast.
Wow. Oh yeah. That'll improve your time, won't it?
Fear is a powerful motivator for sure.
Man, yeah. I would love to see my playlist from 10 years ago because I know it's changed drastically. There's only two shows I know of that would have still been on my playlist back then that are on my playlist now. And one is School of Podcasting with Dave Jackson because he helped me get started with my very first podcast, and Jordan Harbinger. It wasn't the Jordan Harbinger show back then. He was on The Art of Charm, I think, was
that's the show.
Yeah, he was hosting that show back then. But other than that, man, I would love to see that list.
That's so funny because Jordan Harbinger is like my person that I look up to in podcasting as far as like a similar show. I wish on the one hand, I wish that I had learned about his show before starting mine. And on the other hand, I'm really glad I didn't because I would question whether I was copying him or if the idea came from myself. But I started listening to the Joe Rogan Experience, and that was my gateway, but it was on YouTube. I didn't even know how to listen to a podcast.
Oh.
The same year that I started my show, I had just figured out how to listen to a podcast on a podcast app. So
wow, that's cool. Yeah.
Yeah. But I've never really been into the true crime genre like a lot of my friends are, but I'm aware of it. So when I came across your show, what stood out to me was how differently you operate it. It didn't feel voyeuristic or, you know, extorting the victims. And I think that's partly because the experiencer is telling the story, right? Not the host.
Exactly.
And you also hold space for people in, I think, a really unique way. I know when you started the show, you hadn't come across any shows that told stories in the way that you wanted to hear them. What was it that you specifically wanted to do differently when you started? What was that like?
Well, if you think about a lot of the true crime shows, and I'm kind of with you, I don't really listen to the true crime genre. I do listen to Criminal, maybe just because I like Phoebe Judge's voice, the best voice in podcasting, I think. But I don't really get into that so much. But most of the true crime shows, when I've heard some, it's two hosts talking about a crime. And here's what happened, and wow, what do you think that meant? And then they had some more evidence, and then they arrested the guy. I want to hear firsthand from people who have actually been through it, and not necessarily a crime. That's the other thing. My show isn't true crime. Some episodes are, but just somebody that has gone through something where if they start telling a story of what happened, I want people to feel like, oh man, I got to hear the rest of this. What, you know, how did this turn out? What was that like? That's where they got the name of the show. Plus the domain name was available. That was handy. But yeah, that's what I wanted. And I didn't see other shows doing that. And I'd already been doing a podcast previously. I actually done two podcasts before that. And I thought, okay, I already know how to do a podcast. So I'll just do it myself.
Yeah, your previous podcast was like tech support, right?
Kind of. It was computer stuff for non-techie people, you know, tips and tricks and watch out for this scam and stuff like that. And I did another one in between that you might not even know about.
I do know about it because I properly cyber-stalked you, Scott.
Look at that. I should have known that. You do your
research. I will say that your name is not incredibly helpful for cyber-stalking. You know, if you had a more unique name, I should have Googled Thomas Scott Johnson because I learned that that's actually your middle name, Scott. Right. But yeah, Meredith Hack with Edwards. I'm the only one. Yeah.
That pretty narrows it down. Yeah.
Or it makes it sound like you have a cold. They're like Gesundheit after you say it. Well, I was interested in knowing the contrast of having a show about tech and computers, which I consider a certain department of the brain, and then podcasting, which I would consider a separate and different department of the brain. I think podcasting is more of an art and like a creative endeavor. So to me, it's interesting that you are operating both of those.
It is kind of weird. I don't know. If you have a passion for something, even if you may not be inclined or have a specific skill in that direction, if you have a passion about it, and I've been working on computers. I mean, when I was 16 years old in high school, I got my ham radio license. And so I was in my bedroom at home tapping out Morse code to, you know, to people in other states and other countries. And yeah, I was a real chick magnet.
Oh, yeah, I can definitely see that. Well, yeah. I think there's room for both in podcasting. I mean, I'm curious to hear what you think about this. But I know for me, you know, I love a good Excel spreadsheet. I love it. But I also measure with feelings. Podcasting is an interesting intersection for me because also being on set as a commercial model in different situations allowed me to experience what it's like to be in an organized set. An organized production and a disorganized production. And so I always wanted to take the best parts of the on-set experiences that I had and make it a part of my show because normally I record 4 to 6 episodes at a time. There's a cameraman there. When I started, I had an audio guy and a video guy there. I'm on site on a different location. So we're setting up equipment. So there are true production elements. Like I bring food for the people that are helping me the day of. And so that part is very much the I don't know if it's left or right brain, but the part that's more technical and pragmatic and checklisty and, you know, making sure everything's organized and all the guests are confirmed. And then the part that's the art, I think, is the, you know, creating a conversation that is both interesting for myself and the guest and the listener.
There's so much to think about. Yeah. And yeah, I think both of us, we have a pretty good balance between the tech and the creativity part. And maybe that's why we've both experienced, you know, some degree of success in this.
Yeah, you could be right. You've talked with some really interesting people, like people that have survived mass shootings, people who have survived serial killers, witnessed murders. The only thing that you don't cover is paranormal experiences. Why? Why is that?
Oh, boy. Paranormal, first of all, there's lots of other podcasts that do that.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't be setting myself apart at all for those episodes. But for every episode, I promote it as a true story. And I verify stuff. You know, when people contact me, they pitch me a story. I say, okay, is there any way to verify what happened? Not because I doubt what you're telling me, but you know, I put it out there as true. So I need a police report or a 911 audio or a news article that has your name in it. Or people have sent me their doctor's records. And with paranormal, how do you prove somebody saw a ghost or something? You know, it's, you just can't do it.
Well, back in the day here in Pensacola, the ghost occurrences or what people interpreted to be paranormal experiences were actually in the newspaper. And so Pensacola is such a unique place in that way, because when you take a tour with the UWF Historic Trust, who they're the main sponsor of my show, that's where I record the show in Trader John's. And they have records like that go way, way back. Pensacola is the oldest settlement in the U.S., which I know some people will say St. Augustine, but this is the oldest settlement. Like,
wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. So our records go back to the 1500s, and there's all these accounts in the newspaper of people who experienced spooky things. The most famous is the one at the firehouse, which is now the Quayside Art Gallery, where a poltergeist entered the firehouse and tormented all of the firemen who were like in their beds at that moment. And so there's this long article, and so it's one of the main stops on the tour. So, you know, I think nowadays, no, that's not going to make the paper.
Right,
but verifiable, right. You know, is somewhat in the eye of the beholder, I suppose. Although I did interview Dr. Bruce Grayson. He is a medical doctor, psychiatrist, who also an atheist. And that matters because he studied near-death experiences for 50 years, trying to apply the scientific process to something that we would consider very, very fringe. And I really enjoyed that. I like high contrast guests, you know, like I don't like stuff that's really on the nose, you know, like if you're a success coach and you talk about how to be successful, like it's not enough contrast for me. You know, if
right.
you were in prison for 15 years on a murder charge and now you're a success coach, call me. I'm interested in that.
I agree with that. And that episode that you mentioned, I did happen to listen to that.
Oh, okay. And what did you think?
Well, I think you know my position on this.
I do.
Because we have spoken about it. But the things that struck me about what that man was talking about as far as near-death experiences and, you know, leaving your body and floating above the room and, you know, seeing what's going on. Number one, he admitted that it was all anecdotal. There hadn't been any actual scientific studies to prove or disprove that. One of the things that he started saying is when somebody would tell him a story and he would say, I don't know how this person could have known. The whole key there is, I don't know how this person could have known or could have done what they say they were going to do. Or it's having knowledge. So the key is, I don't know. So that's important. And also I think he mentioned ketamine, or is it ketamine? I don't know. And serotonin, they can replicate some of the features of near-death experiences. So that could be a factor as well. I try to think of myself as evidence-based, and I don't know. You know, you talk about those people, those stories that were made the newspaper. Well, if people can do something and think they're going to get in the newspaper for it, I think they might say some other stuff that maybe didn't quite happen.
I don't know. That's true. I think what I admired so much about Dr. Grayson's approach is that he, in my view, had such a pure view of the scientific process. He doubted his own conclusions on a regular basis. And I don't always see that happening in scientific communities. Not like I'm in them a lot, but you know, I do speak with people and read things. And it seems like there's just a lot of like sticking to your guns in the scientific world and not acknowledging something is a hypothesis. So that's part of the reason why I just have so much respect for Dr. Grayson. Actually, there's a lot of people at the University of Virginia, that's where he's at, who study this sort of thing, past life experiences, things that you would not consider even able to enter the realm of scientific study. They really try to do that. And they're very careful about the podcasts that they go on to. And so I was very honored that he would come on my show. But I mean, if I could just go and set up shop at the University of Virginia with a microphone and, you know, my Rodecaster Pro, I would totally do that. Just be like, please come sit, talk to me, tell me everything that you know, because that sort of curiosity that they have is what I admire so much. And that's what drives me in my show, is if we can hold on to that on an individual basis, then I think it will actually make the world a better place, which is, I know, far-fetched and kind of woo-woo sounding, but I don't think it's wrong.
No, I'm with you on that. And I agree with you. There are some even in the scientific community, quote unquote, that want to believe something, so they'll kind of come to a conclusion and then look for evidence that supports that conclusion. But that's not the way the scientific process works. You know, I've heard of one of the scientists who is a biologist, so I listen to regularly. He said, in science, you never accept something. You refuse to reject it. Because once you've come up with a hypothesis, you look for every way possible to prove it wrong, as opposed to, you know, coming up with something and then looking, okay, how can this be true? Let's just look at those, at that evidence, you know?
I like that a lot. Mm-hmm. That's really good. Okay, so speaking of hypothesis, or hypotheses is, I guess, how you're supposed to say it. Mm-hmm. A lot of the guests on your show, they've had super close calls. I mean, obviously, they have to be alive to talk to you. Unless you can interview a ghost, and then that would be very impressive.
That's one of my criteria. I only interview the survivors.
Yeah. Roger that. And they, a lot of them will attribute some sort of divine intervention, or, oh, my angels were looking out for me that day. So, I mean, as someone who doesn't really buy into that, how do you respond to that? Do they know that you aren't really on board with that?
I don't. Some of them might know what my personal opinion is, but when they're telling their story, that's their story. You know, I have on some occasions when I hear, like when somebody pitches me their story, I try to find if they've written the whole story in detail in a blog post or something, or if they've been on another podcast and told it in some way, so that I can kind of form my own notes and ask my own questions and things. And if their entire story consists of, I only got through this because of my faith in God, God watches over me, and he, and, you know, I don't want my episode to be a 1-hour sermon. And I tell them that up front, but I also tell them, you know, at the end, I'm going to ask you, what do you attribute to your getting through this? Or have you gotten therapy? Has that helped? And if you want to talk about God getting you through it, I have no problem with that at all. I just don't want it to be stretched out for a long time, because again, I'm thinking with the audience in mind. And for some of the audience, as soon as, you know, Jesus was with me is mentioned, they're saying, oh, here we go again. Mm-hmm. But yet other people are saying, yes, obviously Jesus helped them get through it. So I try to have that balance rather than have, you know, too much of one thing.
How do you determine when a guest is a yes for you?
Oh, man, there are multiple factors with that. One is I'd like to hear first their whole story in detail. And they do that on my website. If somebody has a story, go to the website, click on submit your story. And I tell them right in those instructions, the more details you can give me, the better. And I know that's going to be more work for you, because it might take you 2 hours to write out the whole thing in detail. But that's going to really help me determine, because I'm picturing them telling that story on my show. And is, can I see that in my head? And is it going to be interesting? And that's one thing. Another thing is, what's the title of the episode going to be? Because I use the same naming convention for every episode, the person's name and what happened to them, without really revealing the whole story. You know, like Whitney got shot 12 times. Well, okay, we know what happened to Whitney, but okay, what's all the details? But I know that's going to be a good title, and I title all of them the same way. And also it has to be a story that takes 45 minutes to an hour to tell. You know, it can't be something that they can just fly right through. And I ask them that up front too. But I my big thing is I want to get right to the action. Okay. We do have to have some setup so that people kind of have an idea of what's going on at the time, whenever it happened. But I mean, the worst question you can start a show with is, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Oh my gosh. Can you say it louder for the podcasters in the back? That drives me crazy. Don't talk about the weather, and don't make your mm-hmm. guests introduce themselves. You might not write a fancy intro for them and read it live, but mm-hmm. at least don't make them go, oh, well, I'm so-and-so and this is what I do. It drives me bananas. And top podcasters do it. It's so, yes. You know, it's a, I guess it's a little bit of just personal preference, because it's working for some people, but I hate it. I hate it so much.
It is. It is. I don't like it at all. Well, there's one show that I know of that starts that way, and it's appropriate. And this is a show called Birth as We Know It. It's a friend of mine, Kiona, and every episode is someone talking about their story of giving birth. And she always starts each episode with, tell us about yourself and who's in your family, because that's exactly what that story is going to be about. Who are the little kids in your family? You know, we're going to hear about them being born. And so it kind of makes sense there. That's the exception. Other than that, no, think of something more interesting to start with.
That's, I think, the unexpected part from the listener point of view, I'm guessing, is they might not realize that as a podcaster, you're not only the talent, you're the producer. So even though you are the one asking the questions and you're face-to-face with the guest via technology, you are also the person who has to script, if you will, like create an outline of the flow of the conversation. And I think for you, it's especially challenging potentially because this is a delicate topic. Like some of the people that come on your show, the terrible thing that happened to them is not years gone by. It was like one time it was like 6 weeks or something, you said.
Oh man, that was a rough one. Yeah, that was a man named Travis, and this is on episode 30. He had just lost his teenage son, to an asthma attack. And when we started recording, it was 6 weeks, since it had happened. And I asked him right, before we actually did the recording, I said, is it too soon? I mean, maybe we should wait a little. You're still, obviously, you're in an emotional state and all that. And within 5 minutes of recording, he was crying, which, of course, obviously, it makes sense. But no, he wanted to do it then because it was important to him that his son, when his son passed away, he was an organ donor. And by his passing, his organs saved other people's lives. So Travis, his mission now is to increase awareness for organ donation, because that's what made his son's death have meaning and purpose, as sad as it is. It's tough to know when is the right time, because people recover from these things or get through them at a different pace. So I kind of let the guest, I figure if someone is pitching me their story, they're probably ready.
Yeah. It's still challenging from a production standpoint, though, because it's, in many cases, it's the first time that they're even sharing the story publicly.
Yes.
And it's just such a delicate thing to be like, okay, can you please get a microphone? Can you use headphones? Mm-hmm. All right, we're going to start here, but I need you to speak in the present tense about the person who died until we get to here. And then we're going to switch to past tense. Otherwise, it gives it away,
Yes, I've had those conversations, and it's very difficult. I don't want to say something inadvertently that is triggering or offensive or re-traumatizes the person that I'm speaking to. But yeah, I have to also think about the end result and how the listeners are going to hear this. And so I just tell people, the guest, that we're just going to tell it in a linear, first this happened, then this happened, and there are ways of phrasing things. Like one of my guests, Laura, who lost her son in a hot car death, and she's going to speak of her son in past tense, but the first question I asked is, tell me what your life was like back then. And then it's all past tense, so it makes sense. It doesn't give anything away. And so it's kind of, you really have to have a balance. I really want to be in tune with and completely focused on the guest, but I've also got to be thinking, is that something I can edit, or should I have them say it again? Or, it's not an easy thing.
No, it's really not. I hope that our listeners right now are find this interesting, because I think pulling back the curtain behind some of the most popular things in media is interesting. But I think it's even more meaningful when the creators kind of have a purpose for making the content. Do you feel like you have a hope for what your podcast will create in real life?
Yes. Not so much like when I started the show, one of the goals wasn't, okay, I want this podcast to really have a big impact, but the individual stories, yes. And I was really fortunate on the very first episode of my show with a woman named Jen who accidentally killed someone. She caused a fatal accident. And her big thing is to not drive distracted. And I had several listeners say, after hearing that story, I am so much more aware. I don't even talk on my phone while I'm driving now. I'm careful when I'm changing the radio or whatever. And Jen was not even convicted of anything. The grand jury did not find her at fault because she wasn't driving distracted. But she very well could have been. And when this thing happened. And so that's one thing. It's an effect that has been on the audience just from hearing that one story. One of my early episodes, episode 5, was with a man named Mark who donated his kidney to a stranger. And episode 5, I mean, this is almost 6 years ago now, and I still get emails every once in a while because when somebody discovers the show, they often download all the past episodes and they start right with episode 1. And so people now are still hearing Mark's episode for the first time and they'll email me and say, man, I heard him talk about this. It's not difficult. People need this. I'm going to be an organ donor. I'm going to be a kidney donor. I want to donate my kidney because you got two of them. And so that has had an effect on people, obviously. One of my recent guests, I just did another one. My recent guest, Stacy, heard Mark's episode, went to and donated her kidney. And then she came on the show and talked about her process of donating a kidney. So yeah, that's the kind of thing, not so much podcast in general, but those individual, when people hear stories like that, and I've got 170 episodes, there's a lot of lessons that we can learn, you know, and hopefully that's happening.
And it's interesting that you have created this ecosystem where your future guests and your past guests are interacting. And sometimes I've heard you say that you find your guests through past guests or through your listeners. What's the most unexpected way that you find your guests for your show?
That's kind of tough now. In the beginning, obviously, I didn't have an audience. I didn't have any listeners to start out with. So I just made a list of people that I want to talk to, you know, like somebody that was saved from a burning building or somebody that went in and saved somebody from a burning building or somebody that got struck by lightning. And then I just started looking up news stories to try to find these people. But now, yeah, the audience is big enough that most of the guests come from the audience and they're just pitching me their stories. Some of them are a good fit. Others, not really. I have to reject a lot of them. And that's one of the most awkward things you can do.
That, especially because, since they've like poured their heart out in their application to come on your show.
Yes. And well, not all of them. Some of them, even though I tell them to do that on the application page, some of them will use the phrase, long story short. And okay, well, I don't want the long story to be short. I want you to tell me everything. But yeah, I've had one of the very early submissions was someone who said, okay, I've got a great story for your show. And I'm willing to come on the podcast and tell this. I was going out my front door and I fell down the steps and I hit my head. I had to have stitches. Okay, there's the whole story.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That's crazy really to me because like I think about how uncomfortable I am on other people's podcasts. Like when they talk about strategies to grow your show, and you know this because you're you're one of the teachers at the conferences that help people know how to grow their podcast. One of the main approaches is to be on other people's podcasts for discoverability. I really dislike that. I've gotten better, but I don't pitch myself. Like it's just, it feels so uncomfortable. I don't like being vulnerable. And Theo Von is a comedian and a podcaster, and he is just so good at being vulnerable. He's likable and relaxed. Me, I'm like that dog in the yard who you walk up on and they're right in the middle of a poop and you make eye contact and it's so uncomfortable and, you know, there's no turning back. You're just sort of standing there like
it's uncomfortable for you, not the dog, right? They don't
I'm
care.
The dog. I'm the dog.
Oh, you are the dog analogy. In that story. Okay. All right. Yeah. It's like if you're in a public bathroom and in the stall and somebody opens it up, it's like, you know, it's always the same expression, right? Like,
yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Sorry.
So are you more comfortable doing the interview or being interviewed?
Definitely doing the interview.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because I usually have two or three pages of notes with all the details about the story. And any question that I ask, I already know the answer to it usually. But I like serving up easy questions for the guests just so they can continue telling their story. And a lot of times, depending on how they answer, I like to, in the editing process, just edit out my question. Nobody needs to hear the question because it's just, that's the way it sounds like the guest just being a really good storyteller. And I've had so many guests say, man, you made me sound so good. And that means they're more likely to share it too. And that's my main goal is I want them to sound really good, which means the audience is going to enjoy it. They're going to be happy with the final outcome and everybody's happy.
Have you ever recorded an episode and not aired it?
Yes, I have. Yep. That has happened. I had a guy who was, he was an older man and he went to the gym one morning. And he was getting on the treadmill. It's about 6:30 in the morning. And they had a, you know, how gyms have like a big row of treadmills. And all of the treadmills faced the parking lot. So big glass wall, you can see everything going on. I guess that's just to avoid boredom. So he's getting on the treadmill. He starts walking. And a car crashes right through that wall into his treadmill. Knocks him back. And the gym had cameras. So I saw a video of it happening. The treadmill gets pushed back into him as he's falling on the floor. I think he broke his nose. And yeah, he told that whole story in 15 minutes.
But okay.
Yeah, so he just, I can't put a 15-minute episode out, you know?
Yeah.
So
that's interesting. I've only had one, but I've had more than one that I should not have aired.
Oh, you aired them anyway, huh?
Well, this is kind of, you know, again, we're pulling back the curtain on the creation process in podcast land. When I was a new podcaster, I really didn't feel like I had developed the creative autonomy to make those calls. And I was paying for the production. I didn't own a microphone. I didn't know anything. Creating my podcast was a very intuitive decision. It just felt right. I knew mm-hmm. my mission of what I wanted to accomplish in the real world through this digital platform. And I just said yes, which is very unlike me. I'm normally like, ooh, let me overthink this. And so that's good. But the kind of, I don't know, downside of it was I had to outsource everything. And so when I would record an episode, in my mind, I'm like, oh, that costs X amount of dollars to make that. And for whatever reason, I was completely obsessed and committed to producing and airing a new episode each week. So although I recorded in batches, if I didn't air one episode, it kind of would have messed up my cadence. And so I did air a couple of episodes that I just hope no one listens to ever.
And what episode numbers are those, Meredith?
I don't want to say because there are people in my community. And so they would know.
Yeah.
But, you know, privately, if you ask me, I'll tell you. But then I did not air one recently, even though I had done extensive research. Each episode of mine represents hours of work. And it sounds like a really smart, snappy conversation, but that's not by accident. If they've written a book, I've read it, you know, I've listened to at least two other interviews that they've done. I'm trying to extract their typical talking points and replace them with more interesting and unique questions mm-hmm. and answers. And the one that I didn't air, he was the producer of a show that had a quality that you mentioned earlier where you said you edit out your question and then it makes the guest look really great. However, he edited his podcast, made him look like a great person to interview. And even though I had found other interviews with him, he also sounded great on those. But they were all very NPR level, highly produced shows.
Right.
In person and on the mic, he's very, very nervous. And so it didn't make him sound like an expert, even though he totally is. And he's brilliant and wonderful. Yeah, it made him sound so uncertain of himself that it was a 50 minute episode, and I didn't air it. So, yeah.
How did you explain that to him?
Oh, I definitely didn't.
Oh, but he never asked you, hey, when's it going to go live?
No, I think he felt uncomfortable, and I think he probably would be relieved to know that I didn't air it. As bad as that sounds.
Better to just avoid those awkward situations by telling somebody, sorry.
Yeah, I'm sure I'll run into him at a podcast thing, but it's okay. You know, he's a professional, so he knows. I mean, I've been on podcasts where they didn't air the episode.
Wow. Did they tell you proactively, or did you ask and they said, didn't really?
On a couple of them, I asked and they were like, oh, I never launched my show. That's a mistake. You know, I won't come on a show that isn't aired yet anymore. And then the other one, she stopped.
So obviously that wasn't your fault then. Obviously.
No. I do think there's been a few that haven't aired, but one of them that I think was my fault, I just don't think I was a good fit for the show. At least that's what my insecurity tells me, because it was just like a really cerebral show. Really smart people were on it. And I was like, yo, are you sure you have the right girl? And he's like, oh, yeah, you're brilliant. Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it. He's British, obviously. That's my British accent, everyone. And so we did it. And I brought my A game. Like, I really did the best that I could, but they never aired it. And there was multiple hosts, multiple producers. And so I think this guy was just a fan of Meredith and not like... It just really wasn't a fit. And so I think the other people, in my imagination, this is what happened. But yeah.
Well, that's good. That's a good story to tell yourself, I guess. I mean, but you're a smart person, though. You could fit in with those. But I didn't hear the conversation either, so.
Hey, Curiositors. Just a quick pause to show gratitude to our sponsors and give you some special deals. My husband and I have been using Liquid IV since 2019. We love that you put it in cold water and it actually dissolves and, you know, tastes awesome. Lately, strawberry lemonade flavor has been my go-to. They also have sugar-free now. And in just one stick, I get 5 essential vitamins and hydrated 2 times faster than water alone. Get 20% off when you go to liquidiv.com and use code CURIOUS at checkout. That's 20% off anything you order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code CURIOUS at liquidiv.com. If you love true crime but hate the shows that leave you hanging, you're going to love the show What Was That Like, hosted by Scott Johnson. He interviews ordinary people with extraordinary stories, like people who survived a mass shooting, found an abandoned baby, or got deals on Shark Tank. Every guest is carefully vetted, and many of the stories have an unexpected insight or inspiration. As you know, I'm not a true crime fan, but I love What Was That Like because it's the victims themselves sharing their stories, and I also love the way that Scott holds space in such a respectful way. In fact, I love the show so much that I accepted an invitation to be a co-host on the weekly Tuesday segment. Find What Was That Like anywhere you listen to podcasts and let me know what you think. Spring has sprung, but so have the mosquitoes, and that can be a real buzzkill. See what I did there? I've been using Insect's mosquito service since 2019, and they continue to impress me. They guarantee their work, and pollinators are always top of mind. Don't wait till the last minute to get on their schedule. If you're in the Florida Panhandle or the Gulf Coast of Alabama, give Insect a call, ensec.net. The Florida Panhandle isn't just the home of your favorite podcaster. That's me, by the way. Shameless, I know. But it's also a go-to spot for a lot of families on vacation. Don't plan a Pensacola trip without getting tickets to the UWF Historic Trust. It's good for a whole week, and it's a great indoor activity option. You'll recognize Trader John's, where I record the show, in the Pensacola Museum of History. Get your tickets in person so you can show the agent one of my emails and get $2 off an adult ticket. Now back to the show. Remember to stay till the end, where I give you a sneak peek of next week's episode. this is actually perfect segue, because this is another question that I wanted to ask you. And so I'll share my answer and then you can tell me yours. The question is, how has podcasting changed your mind on something? And it has changed my mind that I'm smart. It's not that I thought I was dumb, but did I think that I could have conversations with philosophers, PhDs, political science people, you know, researchers? No, but I totally go toe to toe with them. And even after years of doing that and having great conversations, I still just felt insecure. And I talked to one of my past guests called Courtney Farrell, and she was like, "Sister, you need to drop it. You need to drop that whole I dropped out of community college bullshit. You are smart. You know, there's nothing wrong with you. And smartness is not a paper. Smartness is in your head, and you are smart." And so I was so encouraged. And I met her more or less through podcasting. So that's one way podcasting has changed my mind about my own perception of myself, which is really valuable for me.
Yeah, that is valuable. I love that story. Not sure that podcasting itself has changed my mind about something. It has made me, it's made me much more open to other people's stories and experiences, though. You know, you might read a summary and of somebody's story and immediately decide who was right, who was wrong in that scenario. But there's always nuance, and there's other factors, there's other things to consider. So I hope, having talked to all these people, that I'm not as quick to judge someone, because obviously when you read something in the news, that's going to be a slanted story. And of course, even when I talk to a guest, I'm still only hearing their side of the story too, but I'd like to think I'm a little more compassionate to what they went through, you know?
And that's super valuable.
Mm-hmm.
As we wrap up, I have a few random podcasty questions for you.
Ooh, nice.
And one of them is about a dream guest. So other than Sandra Bullock, which you affectionately call Sandy, so cute, by the way, who's a dream guest for you?
Sandy, if you're listening to this, give me a call. My dream guest, I already know her name, but I only know her first name. Do you know the story already?
No, I don't.
Okay. Her first name is Genesis, and she appeared on an episode of The Carbonaro Effect. Michael Carbonaro is a magician, and it's kind of a reality show, sort of, but it's set up where he'll be playing like a retail worker or something, and he'll be behind the counter. The customer comes up, and he has, maybe he might have a small box that he's opening or unloading, and he pulls out like a basketball, which was impossible to fit in that box. And just see the reaction of people like, wait a minute, how did, they don't believe what they just saw. And so it's always like that. He's doing magic really for an audience of one, the person in front of him, and they don't even know that it's magic. They just think they're kind of losing their mind. Well, Genesis was one of those targets of his magic, and her reaction, actually, you know what? We should put the YouTube link in the show notes for your episode for this one, so people can watch. That's only like a 5-minute video of when she was on his show, and I thought she was going to have a panic attack or a heart attack or something because of the way she reacted to what happened. So it happened in Chicago, because it was at the Wrigley Field, I guess, the home, Chicago White Sox Stadium, whatever stadium that is. That's where it happened. So I'm kind of thinking she lives in Chicago, in the Chicago area. And I know her first name is Genesis, and I have a picture of her, but so far nobody has been able to connect me with her. So that's my dream guest. I want to talk to her about how did that work out? How did you end up being there? And what were you thinking when you thought the laws of physics have just been broken right in front of me? And yeah, I just want to talk to her about that whole experience.
Wow, that is so specific. No, I didn't know that story. I feel like your show would benefit from having a person on staff who finds the people, you know, mm-hmm. who like, you know, I know the talk shows have that, but someone who goes out and have you seen this woman? And then brings them to you.
Yep. I have people like that. They're not on staff, but they're in my Facebook group. Like, you know, they see a news story. It's like, wow, this truck, the truck driver was, he drove off the bridge and it was hanging off and they rescued him and they got him back. And I want to hear that story. Well, the problem is I'm just one person and I've got to do all the research and make all the notes and contact the person and set up the time. And I can just only do so many. And I release an episode every 2 weeks, sometimes bonus episodes in between. But yeah, I'll never run out of content. That's for sure. Because there's crazy stuff happening all the time.
I have guests that I know their first and last name and I still can't find them. So maybe wow. I should use your Facebook group members to help me. Like, there's no one on my list that's famous in a mainstream across the board way. They're all well known, well respected within their communities, but I'm not particularly attracted to fame for fame's sake. Like if you're interesting and mm-hmm. you happen to also be famous, I'm down, but I tend to just go for if you're interesting. Like there's this guy named Khan Slobodchikov. I'm butchering his last name, but he's
the common spelling, I assume.
The common spelling, yes, naturally, okay. with the silent okay. H, obviously.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
We're on the same page. Go ahead.
We're on the same page. Yeah. And he studies the language of animals. And so he'll like study a crow, for example, and he'll break down, oh, this sort of call means this and that sort of call means that. And I just would love to have a conversation with him. But another one is Alula Arthur. She's the number one death doula. And you just have to have a big audience for her to come on. So I got a very polite no thank you message from her people. But I have a few really obscure ones that maybe in the future I'll be able to wrangle them in or hire a private investigator to go seek them out. That yeah. won't be creepy at all for them. They'll be like, who is this person?
If you have somebody that you know their name and where they live, I can probably help you find some people.
Okay. Well, that would be great.
Okay. I want to ask you something. Your show is known for, you frequently use the word taboo topics. Is there any topic you would not talk about?
That's a great question. Kind of depends on where I'm at the moment. If you asked me that when we first started the show, it would have been a very long list. I remember in my first 6 episodes, I talked about how I have a medical marijuana card and I was trembling in my boots. And then episode, you know, 30-ish or something, I talked about the history of India and like sex. And I was mortified that my guests used the word masturbation. But then fast forward, just, I don't know, 6 months after that, I did a whole episode about the strange history of vibrators and the stigma of masturbation. And wow. then, yeah, so I have since, it's like I become more and more like myself, which is such a cool growth experience because in mm-hmm. real life, I will totally talk about this with anybody that will sit still long enough. You know, there's lots mm-hmm. of things that I'd happily discuss, but it's different when you're on the microphone. I mean, it is recorded. You know, things yeah. on the internet are permanent.
Yep. So, yeah. You're putting yourself out there for sure.
Yeah. So, you know, top of mind right now is a question that I fear if I ask it out loud, my grandfather will roll over in his grave. Along with every other veteran. But the question is, do our votes really matter? So I am doing an episode on voting, but I don't know if we're going to ask that question straight on. The question that we are asking straight on is, should everyone's votes count the same? And so it's an episode about epistocracy, the idea that if you're a more informed voter, then your vote counts as double, let's say.
Mm.
Yeah.
I heard someone once say that if you subscribe to People magazine, you should not be allowed to vote.
Oh, that's interesting.
And I can see the logic behind that, sort of, but that's probably not ever going to happen.
Yeah, I don't know if that's causation or correlation.
Right.
So right now, that's sort of like the taboo topic that, you know, I haven't really done anything with. I also haven't done anything mm-hmm. with like the trans community or, you know, gender identity. And it fits so great for my show on the one hand, but on the other hand, it's so over covered in the mainstream media that I sense that my audience would be tired of it. Because I've done stuff like queer topics on my show before, and they mm-hmm. really don't hit great because I think that the market is oversaturated with that sort of topic. And so finding these more obscure topics seem to hit home a little bit better. Like ones that people ask in private, and they impact their lives in a direct way. Like, can a sexless marriage survive? That one mm-hmm. aired not that long ago. And we got great response, but also mm-hmm. a great response from just people emailing me and saying, yeah, this made a difference. And mm-hmm. I've been in a sexless marriage for 11 years, or I was in a sexless marriage and here's how we fixed it. And so I really like those particular topics, mm-hmm. especially.
Yeah. And you're right. The trans topic is covered a lot in the news, but that's not how you would cover it. And you'd be talking to someone specifically. I mean, the news is about people, but you're talking with someone. I think your listeners would want to hear that.
Okay. That's listeners weigh in because I want to know. Mm-hmm. I was impressed with how Jordan Harbinger covered this topic. He covered it indirectly through the conversation about hormone impact and how hormones affect your personality. And so he did a great job. That's one mm-hmm. of my favorite episodes, but he's such a pro. So I listen to something that he's covered, I am on one hand incredibly entertained and informed. And on the other hand, I want to go and jump off a bridge because I'm like, now I can never cover that topic because it's been done so well.
Yeah. But I mean, does your audience listen to Jordan Harbinger though?
Some of them do simply because I've recommended him, mm-hmm. but I don't know what percentage. They listen to This American Life. They listen to Glennon Doyle, We Can Do Hard Things. That's from a recent poll in my Facebook group. But
no, okay. There is, I often would think that, yeah, I'll talk about anything other than what we've talked about, the paranormal, you know, stuff like that. But I heard another show have a guest on who was a priest who had molested a young boy.
Oh, wow.
And the guest was the priest.
What?
And he told that whole story. And I, at the time, this is one of those things that I remember where I was when I heard that story, because man, I couldn't believe it that this guy would really put that out. And it got there was a lot of controversy. Now I think in general, and the show is still out there, still doing well, not that episode specifically, but the show is doing really well. So it didn't kill his show, obviously, but man, that took some courage to give that guy airtime. Cause that was the negative thing. Why do we even want to hear from this creepy pedophile? And he not only talked about that, but the fact that his church moved him from there to another church rather than completely eliminating him or firing him. I don't know what the process is, but I mean, obviously that's something the Catholic Church has been dealing with for a long time. But yeah, I don't know if I would have somebody like that on the show. That would be a tough call. I guess it kind of depends on what their message is. But he didn't even seem, I mean, he acknowledged that what he did was wrong, but he didn't seem extremely remorseful. So, I mean, that's the feeling that I got. I don't know.
It's tricky because as a podcaster, you realize that, like you said, you're giving airtime to whatever it is that you're discussing. So you do feel a weight of responsibility to some degree to offer whatever you're giving your audience in a vetted way and in a fair way. There's a part of me that would really love the chance to take a whack at a more, I'll call it NPR style episode where for example, like the trans subject would be like the perfect one for this because mm-hmm. I could speak with people who are trans, and then I could speak with people who are trans and detransitioned, medical doctors who are, you know, both for and against transitioning people surgically. I think that would be really cool, but it's a lot of work. So funny, that actually leads me to my next question, because I have like this laundry list of creative ideas for my show. I mean, so many, which is why I'm trying
to... Why does that not surprise me?
Yeah. I'm trying to outsource some of my things and streamline some of my processes to free up time to both make money, because my show isn't making like a lot of money, but also to just continue to use that creativity muscle. Taylor Swift was recently quoted in something, and the long and the short of it was, creativity is a muscle. You can't really take a break from writing songs, because then your muscle atrophies. And I feel like as a podcaster, you are a creator. You're not a songwriter, but you're making things, and you can easily get into a rut of doing the same thing the same way all the time. And so, yeah, I've got all kinds of things are cooking up in my head. So I wanted to know from you, do you have any creative endeavors, out branches of the podcast, that given the time and maybe the funding, that you would want to do?
Yeah, I was just thinking about this the other day. It's not really directly related to the podcast, but I would like to get a pair of glasses, like sunglasses, that have a video camera right in the middle here, so that as I go and interact with someone, it would record our conversation. But I want to go and stand on a street corner with a sign. And I'd let my beard grow for a few days, a sign that says, you know, homeless, anything helps, God bless, you know, just like you see those people, and just see what those interactions are like. Cause I mean, for some people, that's their whole life. That's how they survive. And I would have a little note for anyone that gave me money. I would hand them the note, and then as they drive off, they can read it later. Something like, you know, this is all a setup, but the money that you gave is going to go to a homeless person, and you can see it online here or whatever. But yeah, but I want to record that, maybe put them on TikTok, or, you know, play the audio for, you know, as part of a podcast in the future or something. I'm just not sure what the laws are around here for panhandling. If it's, you know, I don't want to do something, I'm going to get arrested, but...
Then you could be a guest on your own show.
No, that would be too boring. Sorry.
Yeah, there's a lot of laws on recording people without their consent, too. And not just laws within a state or national laws, but also within platforms. Like on YouTube, they cut down on, like, you know, if you don't have the consent of the person, I don't think you're supposed to, like, be able to post their video. But I think this would be a great pitch for a television network, because it's the What Was That Like show, where you go undercover and pretend to be in situations and see what people do. It's a little like What Would You Do? Do you remember that show?
Oh, I love that show. I watch those clips on YouTube all the time. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it'd be a little like that, but yeah, I think that would be really interesting. I like that idea.
They get releases from all their people too, you know. But the thing is, when you're in a public place, if I walked up to somebody in a parking lot or something, that's you don't have any, from legal standpoint, I don't think you have any expectation of privacy for something like that. Now, maybe if you got your kids with you and you don't want your kids being put on YouTube or something, you know, somebody might have a problem with it, but still, I mean, the note that I hand them could say, here's my email, or here's a website, fill out this form. If it's okay for me to use your video, you know, just send me the form with your signature. And I don't know, there's ways to get around that stuff.
Isn't it interesting? Like just this little part of our conversation is the perfect example of what creators go through. You have this creative madness, and then you've got the production side, like you Twitch, and then you become the executive producer, and you're like, hold on, we need release forms from all these people. And
how do we make this happen? Yeah.
How can we monetize on YouTube if we're not permitted to post their likeness, you know, all this stuff. So this has been such a fun conversation. I hope that people will discover your show. This is not a paid endorsement, everyone, just in case you're wondering. This was my idea. I've really enjoyed being your co-host on the weekly segment and getting to know your listeners through your private Facebook group. And so I wanted to introduce my listeners to you, a behind the scenes version of you, to kind of give them, you know, an extra leg up when they go to your show and check it out.
And my listeners are loving you. I've heard that from multiple listeners that, oh, I love Meredith. So yeah, I think it's a good match. And as I said before, I'm having fun with it. We have a good time putting out those Tuesday episodes, and who knows where that'll go, you know?
Yeah.
We might have, you know what? We might, on some Tuesday, we might both be standing on a street corner with a sign, you know, collecting donations.
Oh man. Yeah. There's so much I could do with that. Like, I have 4 ideas already, but we're out of time. Tell people where they can find your show and follow you on socials.
Sure. My show is on any podcast app, including Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or any, whatever app you use. Just do a search for What Was That Like? You can get all the information as well on the website, whatwasthatlike.com.
Awesome. This was great. That's a wrap. Thanks for listening. If you liked this episode, you'll also like the one I did with travel writer and fellow podcaster Joe Sills on episodes that changed our lives. That's episode 119. Stay tuned next week for a remastered episode where I talk with a man who went from being a felon to being a million-dollar business owner.